Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we sat down with Chung Han Lee, MD, PhD, a medical oncologist at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, to talk about exciting progress in non-clear cell renal cell carcinoma. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Lee highlighted the latest treatment developments in non-clear cell RCC, emphasized the need for more precise classification of the histologic subsets of this disease, and discussed the study he co-authored, which investigated cabozantinib plus nivolumab across stratified cohorts of non-clear cell RCC. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Lee, for joining us on an episode of Onc Live On Air to discuss evolving systemic therapies and non-clear cell renal cell carcinoma. It's great to have you with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Look forward to chatting.
So jumping right into it, how would you characterize the progress that has been made in clear cell RCC relative to non-clear cell RCC?
Over the last 5 or 6 years, we really have seen a dramatic improvement in the treatment of clear cell kidney cancer. In that time, we've had multiple phase 3 clinical trials demonstrating the efficacy of an IO-based combination over a monotherapy with a TKI. This is really demonstrated in multiple studies an improvement in objective response rate, PFS, and overall survival for using an IO-based combination, either in combination of PD-1 with anti-CTLA-4 or an anti-PD-1 agent with a TKI. However, in comparison, non-clear cell kidney cancer has really lagged behind. Even up until a couple of years ago, we still saw as the primary NCCN recommended first-line therapy as being a single agent TKI monotherapy with a drug like sunitinib as first-line therapy. So it's actually quite exciting right now to now see multiple clinical trials slowly read out within the non-clear cell space that have demonstrated novel agents with additional efficacy.
Why would you say that drug development historically has been so difficult in this subset of RCC?
Part of that really contributes to the difficulty of development within non-clear cell kidney cancer is the relative rarity of the different histologies. Even though we talk about non-clear cell, non-clear cell is actually a very diverse set of histologies that has been kind of a grab bag of anything that has not included clear cell. In fact, for most of the phase 3 clinical trials, the eligibility criteria defines clear cell as any histology with any degree of clear cell component that's there. So anything that doesn't fall within that category can be considered non-clear cell type kidney cancer. Along with that, we also see an evolution in how we think about the subclassification of this group. You know, with historic classifications, including papillary, chromophobe in unclassified RCC, and also other histologies, including medullary kidney cancer or collecting duct kidney cancer, also as subsets. Now we're starting to see more and more molecular classification and starting to have more defined subsets within that non-clear cell space. Because of that diversity and the rarity, it's very difficult to see very, very targeted specific drugs for these molecular subsets.
And earlier you mentioned how sunitinib had been the standard for these patients for quite some time, and only until recently did we see a change in that standard. Could you explain or elaborate a little bit more on how the results of the PAPMET trial led to that shifting standard?
The PAPMET trial was a pivotal study that has changed the standard of care for non-clear cell kidney cancer in that is among one of the few randomized clinical trials available that has demonstrated improved efficacy for a specific subset of non-clear cell. The PAPMED study was a large phase two clinical trial run across about 65 centers across the United States, which specifically enrolled patients with papillary histology. Patients were randomized to cabozantinib, crizotinib, savolitinib versus sunitinib, and demonstrated improved efficacy of cabozantinib over sunitinib in that study with an improvement in progression-free survival. I think that the investigators of this clinical trial really deserve a lot of credit to enroll all of these patients in a histologically selected subset and were able to complete this study, which actually showed benefit. And I think that this is, it takes a lot of commitment on centers in order to adequately stratify these types of patients, especially for those with rare histologies. And with this, it did get a NCCN designation as a regimen for papillary RCC.
And then recently, in March of this year, you co-authored a paper that was published in the Journal of Clinical Oncology evaluating cabozantinib, the current standard, plus nivolumab. What was the rationale for studying this combination?
So I think that for our study, we were very interested in seeing twofold. So one, the current standard of care being cabozantinib for at least certain subsets of non-clear cell kidney cancer, and within clear cell kidney cancer, the evidence of efficacy for cabozantinib plus nivolumab also demonstrated superior efficacy over sunitinib. So in clear cell RCC, there's been demonstrated of improved, again, overall survival, progression-free survival, and objective response rate over sunitinib in a relatively sick cohort of patients. Historically speaking, we certainly have seen a drop-off in the efficacy when we compare the clear cell data versus the non-clear cell data. But, you know, given the efficacy of the regimen and the benefit within papillary RCC, we were quite interested in seeing whether or not this type of combination would be highly efficacious within this cohort. So in this cohort, one of the interesting things that we ended up doing was we subdivided non-clear cell kidney cancer. Historically speaking, non-clear cell has always been a grab bag of histologies, like I'd mentioned earlier, but we think that there are actually probably some differences between the histologies that could lead to variability in terms of the benefit. For cohort one, the way that we looked at it is we grouped together unclassified papillary translocation and FH deficient into a larger cohort. And then we had a smaller cohort that had just chromophobe RCC. We feel that like doing this type of stratification gives us a little bit more biologic separation between the different histologies. And we were curious to see whether or not this type of biologic separation would translate into differences in efficacy.
And then starting with efficacy, what was seen?
So I think that one of the things that we ended up seeing from a different sort of standpoint is that when we talked about cohort one, so that larger, broader cohort, we saw an objective response rate of approximately 48%, which is among the highest objective response rates that we've seen within a non-clear cell kidney cancer cohort. Granted, it's hard to make comparisons across multiple studies, due to those kind of cross-trial type of comparisons, but it, numerically, at least, it's among the, it really is the highest objective response rate that has been reported thus far. Whereas in contrast for the chromophobe cohort, we actually didn't see any types of objective responses there. Granted, I think that there's a lot of speculation about why that might be the case. But I think that, that biology portion, certainly does need to be worked out a little bit more, but the difference that we saw was certainly quite striking. Part of the reason that we decided to group together a lot of different histologies within the same cohort, like the unclassified, the translocations, the FH deficient, and the papillaries, is there's probably quite a bit of histopathologic overlap between them. And, you know, depending on the institute, there might be different calls that are made depending on which pathologist is actually doing the read. So we decided probably for better ease of comparison to group them together and to study them more collectively.
And could you elaborate a little bit more on what sort of those speculations are in terms of the differential responses that we're seeing?
So I think that we started doing a little bit of genomic analysis on the cohort of patients who have responded. I mean, granted, the numbers are quite small given a small phase two study. We did see some molecular changes that seem to be associated with responses. I think we would say nearly all patients with FH deficiencies or have mutations within NF2 had an objective response. Granted, our numbers are small, but I think it's certainly hypothesis generating. I think that one of the things going forward is to, you know, do a larger trial and see whether or not some of these results can be validated in larger cohorts. The other part is, you know, to later on go back into the lab to understand whether or not these certain mutations are drivers for response in ways that we don't yet understand. And I think that there's a lot of work to be done to try to understand that type of biology.
And then looking at safety, were there any striking signals there?
No, in terms of the safety signals, I think that given the large phase three clinical trials that have already been done with the combination, no real new safety signals were identified with the combination. Overall, the combination of cabozantinib plus nivolumab remains to be well tolerated, with side effects not only consistent with what we see with the TKI, but also side effects that we would expect to see with PD-1 based IO therapy. I think that histology probably does not play that big of a role between the different cohorts in terms of the difficulty with safety that was seen.
So what would you say is next for this regimen? And do you see it ultimately replacing cabozantinib?
So certainly one of the things that we hope, like, you know, I think that that's always up for the guideline agencies to kind of vote and just make a decision on that point. Certainly, I think that we see high levels of efficacy with this regimen. So hopefully at the next NCCN guideline meeting, you know, this regimen will be reviewed now that the paper has already come out in the JCO. For next lines from this regimen, I think that what we're really looking at is further expanding, our clinical trial to gain more information and hopefully do further correlative analysis. The next part of it is beyond just doing our initial look at targeted exome sequencing and just looking at the genomic changes, is to then also understand what immunologic changes may have happened that can contribute to the responses. I think that our hope is that we can get this regimen kind of approved and into the hands of more physicians and patients to really improve patient outcomes.
Well said. Is there anything else that you'd like to mention about this space before we close?
So I think non-clear cell right now is an incredibly exciting space. It's very nice to finally see it garner the same type of attention that clear cell kidney cancer has. I think there are multiple clinical trials that are coming down the line that are going to further guide us in terms of the types of systemic responses that we might end up seeing. One such regimen that we are quite interested in is seeing the combination of lenvatinib plus pembrolizumab. That's an ongoing clinical trial, which hopefully will have results soon. To see whether or not a different TKI IO regimen may also show high levels of efficacy. Also coming up is a triplet therapy. I think that triplet therapy is certainly quite interesting, in the clear cell space. Certainly the results of those studies are not yet available. So we don't know whether or not triplet is better than doublet within clear cell, but there is, a non-clear cell study looking at the combination of cabozantinib, ipilimumab plus nivolumab. And I think that if that's something that could be both safe and tolerable, would hopefully show something quite encouraging.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLiveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.